It's time for the Cheap and Chad's Power Half Hour.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back to the best and only podcast that features our legal record. Joining us all the way from Hawaii, Chief, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Chaz. I have a, as Tim pictured the other day, I have a drink in my hand here in my hotel room. Unfortunately, Perry's abs are out of reach at the moment. he's not in the room.
Did you tell him you were going to do this and he's like, I'm getting out of here?
No, he's a... He may barge in while we're recording this. You never know. Okay. But he was out at the gym, and I think he went shopping a little bit today. Mm-hmm. So he's out at the moment. It's just me right now.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so let's just dive into it. I know you're on vacation. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Let's dive in. We'll start off with just a quick recap of week one. A lot of obvious tensions, obviously, coming down to those last couple games. I lucked out with my win over Gelch, but had he started basically anybody else over Mecole Hardman, he would have won. So again, the decision horse bites him in the butt a little bit there.
You mean Gelch made a bad decision on which receivers play?
He did, but you know what? He made a great decision.
Get out.
In getting Gordon for $12 and Eckler for $12, whatever the hell he spent. So we in the league failed in letting him get basically the starting backfield there. For very, very little money. And hopefully Eckler does not keep doing what he's doing. Otherwise, that might end up as one of the best dollar to point scored ratios we've ever had.
It might be. If he keeps doing that, Melvin Gordon is kind of screwed.
So let's talk
and,
about...
And we'll see how that plays out later on in the season. But for now, Eckler looks pretty good.
Yeah. So let's talk about Gordon real quick. It doesn't really matter because Gelch has both Gordon and Eckler. But basically, here's, for those of you who are not in the know, this is how it breaks down. You have to play at least six games to qualify, to have it count towards your season, right? So Gordon can't sit out the whole season. Otherwise, he'll just end up back on the team again next year because they still have that option for him. Now, what's interesting is there's been reports that he would report maybe by week 10. But the thing is that the Chargers could screw him over because he hasn't been part of practice and stuff. There's a possibility that if he reports that late, that they can get him on the exemption list for 2 weeks, meaning that he would actually only be able to play in about four games, and then he wouldn't qualify. So he actually has to report by week 8 to be guaranteed to make sure that he absolutely would be there for the full 6 games as needed. So just keep an eye on that as things unfold.
Thank you. I'm not aware of that. So thank you for that explanation. I think it'll be enlightening for others in the group.
Yeah. Moving on, we have Kittles and Bits versus Ink Joint. And I don't know everybody's names this year, so I'm going to totally... I know like three of the people. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, also, they're not facing each other, Chad. This was the Jamboree. We're not individual matchups
that's
here.
That's true. All right. Yes. So with that in mind, I was really impressed, obviously, with Rachel's team. I think the thing that a lot of people overlook, that I don't remember exactly how much T.Y. Hilton went for, but, Jacoby Brissett, when he was in that offense 2 years ago, when he took over for Luck when Luck got injured, he had been traded for like 10 days before and not even the season started. So that was Hilton's lowest season. I think he still managed like 800 yards and like 4 touchdowns. So Brissett has now been in that system for 2 years. He's practiced with Hilton. So, I honestly think that you're going to see basically, 95%, 90% of the Hilton that we're used to seeing. Even with Brissett there, I think where the tail's going to fall off is going to be the tight ends and Ebron and what's his name? Doyle. So, the pickup of Hilton was really good. Obviously, we gave her some bad advice in Dante Pettis or Robbie Anderson, even though it was not a big difference.
We gave her bad advice.
I gave her bad advice.
We gave her bad advice. Okay, thank you.
I gave her bad advice.
Thank you.
She's hurt. She's hurt by the whole Tyreek Hill situation. She doesn't really have a great fill-in. She's probably going to have to use Kenny Stills, maybe Chris Thompson with Geis out. But she's got some great running backs right now in Derrick Henry and Mark Ingram. I would expect Freeman to turn things around, but she's set up for a really good run.
I don't with Freeman. I think he is what he is. I don't think he's very good anymore.
Okay.
2015 is a long way away from when he was last really, really good. So yeah. I don't think Freeman is. We'll see. He could prove. I bet he'll have a couple good games, but I just don't think he's going to be that good. I think that Atlanta team is going to be passing, passing, passing. And if they look anything like they did on Sunday, then it's going to be a long year.
Fair.
But Watson looked great.
He did
in the Monday night game. I think he could be battling for, you know, if not number one quarterback behind Mahomes, then maybe number two. We'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I had Watson as the my second or third quarterback overall for the year in my own personal ranking. So, you know, he was someone that I had been targeting. But, you know, I decided to go more in on Jackson. But I think just Watson has shown us nothing that he's not capable. I mean, he's just, you know, it took him a year or two, and he obviously had the ACL injury. But he's in fine fashion. As long as he's got Hopkins to throw to, when he's got Fuller as a deep threat, you got another burner with Stills, and Kiki Kuti should be back soon in terms of his health. So he's got all sorts of receiving options. Duke Johnson has another check down. I don't think Carlos Hyde is going to end up being that much of a factor. But, I mean, he showed
I don't know. Did you see his game the other night? I don't know about that. I'm not so sure about Carlos Hyde there, Chief.
Well, you're Chief, but I thought... I gotta check his
stat I'm chief line. Because I call other people chief.
Yeah, that's why I'm chief. Carlos Hyde's stat line was not that great, but maybe I'll
Carlos remember. Hyde had like 85 yards rushing.
Did he
after
really?
Being there in a week.
I totally missed
Carlos
that.
Carlos Hyde, 10 carries for 83 yards. Yeah, there you go.
Okay, well then
that's being a non-factor.
Okay, I stand corrected. I mean, you know, we've seen with Watson five times last year, he was a league leader in fourth quarter comebacks or like last minute comebacks. And he did it basically again against Drew Brees, but Drew Brees obviously is Drew Brees, and showed him, hey, you know, you're still a young buck, you got a lot to learn, and drove down.
Well, I wouldn't say he did that. I'd say he more did that to the Texans defense,
which was
stupidly coached in the final 30 seconds of that game.
Well, I mean, so was the Saints offense, right? It took Watson two plays to score a touchdown with 50 seconds right. left. That drive was 15 seconds, so...
A lot of questionable defense in the final minute of that game.
Yeah. You know, when I look at the other scores, outside, obviously, you know, week one is always just week one, and you don't know how things are going to go. But based on team makeup, you know, the outside of maybe Jake Mancuso, who, you know, Josh Jacobs looks great. David Johnson was 6 or 8 air yards per target, which is the most he's had ever. Last year, he had like half a yard air target. So Johnson in that offense should be fine. But I think we are maybe already seeing some separation in the league from the top tier teams to, you know, the lower tier teams. You know, I expected more out of some of the teams, especially for like Weans, who's got Thomas and OBJ. That Browns offense did not look good. And this was one of my big concerns, if you remember, was the offensive line. I had a lot of concerns with. And even though I really like Chubb, you know, you're seeing all those problems. And what was worse is watching Baker Mayfield throw, he was missing open receivers. So I don't know if this was just like a week one aberration and maybe they get back on track. But, you know, they've had expectations put on them for this year. And clearly so far, they aren't able to shoulder that. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens with the Browns offense the rest of the way.
It's been 1 week, albeit it was a really bad week for the Browns. But I just was amid all this Browns hype. I always kept thinking to myself, some guy named Freddie Kitchens is their coach, mm-hmm. and what exactly has he done in his coaching career aside from being a coordinator? He's never been a successful head coach, or you know, I was like, this is the guy that they're entrusting all these Super Bowl aspirations to. I just didn't quite get it. But anyway, we'll see what happens. I think they have the Monday Nighter against the Jets this week. And I play Ween, so I'm going to be sweating that one out on Monday night, unless he's already beaten me by Monday night, which is very possible.
This might be the earliest records of you halting. I mean, this could possibly, are you already forfeiting?
No, I'm not already forfeiting.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, you know, other than that, I mean, everyone else has pretty standard performances. You know, we saw some guys come back to life, Le'Veon Bell. You know, he got like 96% of the running back touches, so that's great for him. You know, the Falcons obviously had a down week. I expect them to throw. You know, they're still inside. I think the situation is going to be fine. You should still see Julio perform. Cass seems interesting because, you know, she paid up for McCaffrey, but he looks like he's on track for that, you know, 1,000 yards running, 1,000 yards rushing and receiving kind of pace. And, you know, that was a down game for Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, all it takes is a couple of her guys to just tweak out a little more, and she's up in the scoring in the 120s, 130s, like some of the other teams this year.
Yeah, yeah, no, I McCaffrey looks like a, you know, a potential league winner in that sense.
Yeah,
he looked fantastic in that game
too. So that'll be great. So hopefully Elliott will get his fair share of touches. But my matchup with Kat this week should be very interesting. Let's talk about waivers real quick before we move on to the week two matchups. Obviously, a lot of money thrown around. Were there any particular players that got added, or you know, that added or dropped that surprised you?
No, not really. You know, I think in terms of the overall money spent, it was about as expected. You know, people always go heavy the first week. You made the biggest splashes. I guess I'm a little surprised at the John Ross love from everybody because, first of all, one of his touchdowns last week was very fluky towards the end of the first half. And that accounted for, I want to say, 50 or 60 of his yards and a touchdown. So I've had that in the back of my mind when thinking about a John Ross bid. And we've been here before with John Ross, too. So I guess I was a little surprised by how heavy people were looking to go on him.
Yeah.
What's his name from Washington? The guy who I never heard of last week and then suddenly bid $35 on. I guess he's supposed to be good. I don't know. Maybe he's going to be the number one receiver in Washington, I guess. Case Keenum has been able to support fantasy relevant wide receivers, even though he himself is no better than an average NFL quarterback. So maybe this is his new dude. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see.
But other than that, fairly standard first week. Like I said, you know, usually, obviously, more money's thrown around than is usual for a waiver wire week. But I think this pretty much fell in line with most week ones in the past. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I go back and forth on whether I want to have money, whether I don't want it, whether I want to spend it now. I see the logic in both areas, but it always seems like around week 7, week 8, week 9, there's going to be some running back who again, we've never heard of before, who suddenly finds himself on the precipice of a great opportunity. So you just wonder when that's going to happen this year and how much money is that going to cost you.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, you know, the way I looked at it is that I realize I'm spending probably more money than I needed to, although it makes me glad to see that, you know, you bid 35, McLaurin, and Joe spent 36, because I basically didn't spend way more than I needed to, right? I spent a few dollars.
Right, no, you spent, right. That was
exactly
where
you want to
be. The correct bid, yeah.
And, you know, the way I just looked at it is, you know, if one of those two guys ends up working out, you know, I got a fourth really viable flex option for myself. And realistically, if they both work out, you know, early in the season, you know, if I can get out to an early 3-0, 4-0 lead, even if they tail off, like for John Ross, I think he'll produce until AJ Green comes back, at the very least. But it's one of those things where even if he starts to decline after AJ Green comes back, that's fine because he served his purpose if he helped me get to a few more wins or even giving me the option in case one of my guys get hurt. So I'm fine with the money spent. At the end of the day, you know, generally there are a handful of guys every year that end up being, you know, producing roster fodder for you, and it's just about getting them and then having them in the roster for whenever. So that was really my goal. I like Terry McLaurin a lot coming out, and I have dynasty leagues. I didn't think he would produce this quickly, but obviously he.
I liked him a lot for somebody I spent about a half hour looking into yesterday.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, we know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen with Redskins. my belief is that they're going to be in a lot of negative game scripts where they're going to have to throw a lot this year, and that benefits, obviously, McLaurin. And I feel the same way about the Bengals, honestly. I think they're going to be in a lot of negative scripts, especially because of how badly their line is, and they're going to have to throw a lot. So,
no, that is true. That is true. There could be a lot of negative game scripts there. Same with Washington. I'm looking at some of the waiver wire ads here. I guess probably the biggest one that I did not see, but that caught my eye, Tim going in for $21 on Danny Amendola.
Yep, I'm looking at that right now, too.
That is a bold move. Bold move.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he dropped Albert Wilson. I think it's a little bit premature, but then again, I get it. You know, I don't think anybody wants anything to do with the Dolphins offense this year.
He's not on the Dolphins, though, Chaz.
Albert Wilson. I'm saying he dropped
Albert Wilson. Oh, I'm sorry. Albert Wilson. Okay,
yeah, he dropped Albert Wilson. My bad. So I think that's, you know, if you were to put those two players up to me, you know, in a vacuum, I'm going to pick Albert Wilson. I think he's talented, but I don't think you want to be a part of the Dolphins offense. That is just a bad situation, and they're going to go 0-16. I can't see how they're going to win more than two or three games. I just don't see it. So
they're in the same division with the Jets and Buffalo. Somebody's going to give them a game or two. You know, I don't think the Dolphins go 0-16 because I think they'll beat one of those people at home.
Fair. All right. So let's move on to our matchups for week two. Obviously, you know, we talked about it. I'm facing Kat this week, so that should be really interesting. I think the matchup that I'm most looking forward to outside of my own is actually Gelch versus Tim. I want to see Gelch start off 0-2. You know, Fournette got the almost all the carries last week. Tim's got a decision in Prescott over. I'm getting freaking mad. Are you fucking kidding me? Sorry, I'm going through these things. They're giving me hands now. I think he's got the choice in Prescott over Murray, but I think he's gonna end up going Prescott. I am with all this. The rape accusation and lawsuit stuff, I think it's possible that Antonio Brown doesn't play this week, which will force Gelch to, again, play, hopefully, I would assume he's going to play Moncrief and Washington, although he might sneak Chark in there. That situation's not a great situation either, which is why I think it's going to actually benefit Fournette. I think he'll get a few more touches than he normally would have now that Gardner Minshew, which is a great quarterback name, by the way.
That's Mike's guy, Mike. Mike, I knew nothing about this dude on Sunday, and Mike educated me very quickly. He had Gardner Minshew's bio at the frontal part of his brain, and wow. Just spat it all out to me on Sunday. I was impressed by, and just another example of Mike bridging the gap. Just great knowledge by Mike on Sunday.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the matchup I'm looking forward to most. What about you?
Well, let's see. I haven't really looked at any of the other matchups. If I had to pick one that I'm looking forward to, I guess, it would be...
Rachel Mancuso is also very interesting.
It is. Let's see. Oh, Joe and Goop. Two 0-1 teams here. Joe O'Brien, that is. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens here, but I wonder what happens to the loser if they start off 0-2. How desperate might they be to make moves and look around for help to try and rescue the season? It's a pretty important early season matchup between those two right there. So I guess I would circle that one.
Yeah, no, I can't remember. I'm looking at yours and Ween's matchup. Obviously, he picked up Peterson. So, you know, he's got a plug-in guy there in case for whatever reason Connor can't go this week, so he's a little banged up. I think the Hunter Henry news broke after the fact, after waiver. So he's got to pick
it
up.
Did, yes.
He's got to pick up a tight end tomorrow because he's got no one else on his team that's a tight end. So let's go take a look and see what tight ends are available. Maybe we can screw with Johnny a little bit. And let's take a look. What are the best ones available?
I don't know if it's worth it, but you know,
Ebron Graham. Witten, I bet you ends up with one of those guys.
I bet you ends up taking a flyer on Graham or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, the question is, will he drop Hunter Henry? Because Hunter Henry's only 4 to 6 weeks. But not a lot of great choices there for him. I like Johnny's team a lot. I just, It didn't come together for him last week, but based on the matchup,
you like it. You like it a lot. You like it a lot better than I did.
Yeah,
I was really down on his team.
Yeah,
and it showed last week. But I will say things are looking up for him a little bit after last week. Brady could end up having a really good year. You know, Metcalf seems to be healthy and more involved in the Seahawks offense than we initially thought. So that might not be as terrible a pick. We'll see if the Browns can bounce back. I think he'll still have a decent week, but I think I can beat him. Whether or not I will beat him is another question.
I mean, he's got Brady starting against the Dolphins, so, you know.
Which scares me.
That's,
yes.
I mean, Brady can go for 4 touchdowns, against the Dolphins. That's going to be a rout. I can't even wait to see that game play. You know, it sucked for you a little bit last week because Mike Evans was clearly, you know, even though he played, he was supposedly
sick. He was still sick.
So hopefully that'll change. Although, you know, I was a little wary coming into the season of the whole narrative of like, oh, just because Bruce Arians is now the coach of the Buccaneers, that all of a sudden Jameis Winston is going to be this great quarterback and, you know, all these receivers are going to get touches. Jameis is not that great of a quarterback to begin with. And so, you know, just because he's got Bruce Arians doesn't mean that's going to correlate. And so,
you were really high on Mike Evans though. When did this suddenly enter your head?
Well, you said
Mike Evans could have been the steal of the draft receiver wise.
Just to clarify, I'm high on Mike Evans in terms of target share because of the numbers that he pulls, but not on the rest of that offense, right? Mm-hmm. Which is one of the reasons why I wasn't crazy about Godwin. I didn't even want to touch OJ Howard. Obviously, the running back situation is garbage. So I think Mike Evans might end up being the only real fantasy producer on that team. And it's going to be one of those situations where, like, Eli Manning isn't fantasy relevant, but his wide receivers and OBJ, what? I think that's the situation you're going to see here with Winston. Winston will not be fantasy relevant, but Mike Evans will be. I think he's going to take the overwhelming target share. I wouldn't be surprised if he breaks 25%, which is, again, high. Right. Typically,
that's true.
Typically, elite receivers are 20-25. I think he might be up in the 27-29 region because he's a safety net, and you know we know they're going to throw a lot. So that's kind of where I'm down.
Yeah, no, that was. It seemed like Mike Evans wasn't even on the field in that 49ers game the other day. And you know, the only bad thing about this is they have the Thursday night game, so he has even less time to recover than he would have otherwise. So I'm very nervous about Mike Evans again this week, given that he stunk on Sunday and he's got to play 3.5 days later. So,
All right,
not thrilled with that.
Let's see. I mean, we can talk about you. I guess the only matchup we haven't talked about left is Mike versus Jake. You know, they're both 1-0.
Well, we haven't really talked about others in depth. I just kind of mentioned Goop versus Joe. We didn't really go in depth into them.
Jake picked up Josh Allen today, I think, for just like $1. So that was interesting that he's throwing him in over Garoppolo because I don't think Garoppolo played that badly. Right.
No, Garoppolo played badly. He did. Okay. I watched that whole game. He was horrible.
Okay.
It was bad. He threw a pick six. He just got lucky that Jameis threw 2 pick sixes.
Mm-hmm.
And Garoppolo just looked hesitant. He looked very down on Garoppolo's performance. I'm actually in my head. There hasn't been any chatter about this, but if he performs like that another time or two, I wouldn't be surprised if Nick Mullins gets the start.
Really?
I think they're high on Nick Mullins, and I think that the leash is shorter with Garoppolo than people think. But we'll see what happens this week. Maybe he just needed a game under his belt, and they still did win, so that was good. Yeah. But he did look very shaky.
Yeah, I mean, you know, coming out of week one, Jake's team looks like hot fire, right? I mean, you got Crowder, who's just going to be a PPR target. You know, he took the trendy tight end pick in Darren Waller, who I'd never even heard of, but dude played 100% of snaps and caught 7 balls. Obviously, Sammy Watkins benefits the most from Hill being out, so he stays healthy. Moore and Woods are going to be solid floor players. And, you know, Josh Jacobs is now in running back one territory. He had 20. He's going to get almost all the touches there. He had 23 touches, 23 carries, and a reception for over 100 yards. And his longest rush was 13 yards. And I watched some of those highlights of him. There was a couple times where he was like one tackle away from breaking it. So, you know, Jacobs is going to be real interesting. And then obviously, so Jake's team right now is probably one of the scariest in the leagues. Both him and Kuso. Both Mancusos.
Yeah.
Scary teams.
Yeah, I'm a little more cautious with Josh Jacobs, although I do recognize the volume is going to be huge. Yeah, we'll see, especially with Watkins as the year progresses here, just how much of that is sustainable. But for now, for week two, yeah, his team looks really solid, although ESPN is projecting Mike to win this one.
Yeah, which I don't really get, to be honest. I don't even know if Mixon's going to play. So,
well, he does have Bernard to plug in, and Bernard has proven that he's more than capable of filling in.
Yeah, but in the games that Bernard's, I saw a stat earlier today. In the games Bernard
was, I heard a stat that last year in the games that Mixon missed, Bernard was running back 6.
Really? So I think I saw the same stat, but I think. Maybe I just saw his carries and yards, and I didn't actually see the where he plays. Because to me, when I looked at him, like, that doesn't look that impressive.
Well, he also is heavily involved in the passing game.
Yes,
so,
that's true.
So that's probably where he did some damage as well. I think Michael have a fair shot against Jake. I don't think Jake's going to run away with it. I don't think Jake's team is as good as you think it is. So I think it's going to be more even than anticipated.
Okay, that's fair. I'm looking for it now. I can't seem to find it quickly, so that's okay. Maybe it's overreaction on my part. I just see some high floor players there. I think Watkins is gonna dominate. Although you know the Oakland defense was very good this past week, so it's possible that you know they're gonna focus obviously on Watkins and Kelce the most. So whoever Mahomes, you know, that the fact that Mancuso and Mike have or Jake and Mike have Kelce and Watkins, I think, you know, one of those is going to benefit the most in that game. So last week it was Watkins, this week it could be Kelce. And if that's the case, I think that you know, does put the probability way more on Mike's side, which right now is showing is 55% Mike over Jake.
Who else did we not discuss? We didn't really talk too much about, we didn't really talk about you and Kat.
We talked about it briefly, that I think, you know, our game is interesting. You know, she's obviously got Rodgers. She's who I think will step up this week when he's playing Minnesota. He typically has good games. Though the Vikings defense does look legitimate. Obviously, she's got the human joystick now and McCaffrey. Drake is going to be a real liability for her. I wouldn't be surprised if she throws in, you know, Damian Harris against the Dolphins. You know, even though he didn't really do much, you know, that game could be such a blowout that he gets some work in the back half and end up producing. You know, what's interesting about her having Adam Thielen is that, you know, last week, Cousins only attempted 10 passes. I don't think that'll be the case against the Green Bay this year. Actually, I was just reading
that's a fluke. That's a fluke game
because of how
awful Atlanta was.
In his past games against Green Bay, and this is my point with Thielen is that I think that this might be a down Thielen game is that traditionally, over the past few games, Diggs has been the best receiver against the Green Bay. In 2016, he was 9 receptions, 182 yards, and a touchdown. In the second game, he was 4 receptions, 29 yards, touchdown. 5 receptions, 60 yards, a touchdown. 9 receptions, 128. He has 6 touchdowns and basically averages 100 yards a game in his last 5 games against the Packers. So, this to me reads as a Diggs game. He's off the injury report. He practiced today. So this to me reads as a Diggs game more than Thielen, or at least that's what I'll be hoping for.
Makes sense. Diggs has had some nice games against the Packers. I remember a few years ago that was definitely the case. But you know, new defensive coordinator in Green Bay now. So we'll see. We'll see how they choose to defend the Vikings receivers this time around.
Yeah. Win probability just has me by 1%, so it's a very close matchup. You know, we're both projected over 100 points. You know, obviously we don't put too much into that, but, you know, it is interesting to me that there's a handful of teams that are projected over 100 points. and the feud they're projected under. We've never tracked it, but it'd be an interesting statistics project to track ESPN predictions in terms of their projections and see like how accurate they end up being. I think they end up being wrong more often than not. I feel like I feel they can't have a very high. It's probably like 10% that they're.
Well, it's always what's your definition of a correct prediction and a wrong prediction? Like how accurate within how many points?
I would say 10% variance. If you're within 10%, no, that's too much, right? Because 100 points would be 10 points, so 5%. Mm-hmm. 5% variance would be it for me.
Yeah. Okay.
So, all right. Anything else you want to talk about tonight? Still daytime for you. What are you?
Still daytime for you. It is 3:30 out here in Hawaii. It's lovely out here. It does mess with your sleep a little bit, not gonna lie. But other than that, it's really nice. Are we neglecting any matchups? So I want to make sure that we don't piss anybody off by not talking about their matchup.
Okay. We talked about me. We talked about Dallas. We talked about Jake's. We talked about. We touched on Rachel and Joe Mancuso's.
Yeah, both teams are good. We'll see who scores first to 130 wins that one.
Yeah, we touched on your matchup, and you talked Goop and Joe. So, I feel like we touched on all the matchups.
Yeah, I definitely think we haven't had any trade yet, but that's not so uncommon after week one. But I do expect usually after week two, especially with teams that start off 0-2, which may be me after this week. Those teams usually end up looking to make some trades. So I do expect the trade market to develop a little more next week as opposed to this week.
After this week, we're going to have 3 2-0s, 6 1-1s, and 3 0-2s. So, it's not time to hit the panic button just yet if you're 1-1, but if you're 0-2, you need to look at your team and figure out, okay, what is there that I need to do? Because, historically, I think Mancuso gave us the stat that, like, you start off, like, 0-3, your percentage of making playoffs is, like, I think it's, like, 2%. It's really low. So, Mancuso, please feel free to let us know in the chat what that actually is. My memory is that it's a single digit, if not probably 0%, or very close to it. So, let us know what happens if you start off 0-3.
All right. I think we're good.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games. Go Notre Dame. And we'll see you next time on the Chief and Chaz Power Half Hour.